Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You are listening to Total EM. We have a special deal worked out, a partnership with EB Medicine, evidence-based medicine, which has some excellent journals. I've only recently started diving into them. Everything I've found so far, I absolutely love it. But for those who may be new to the podcast, maybe listening on a different platform, what have you, I wanted to go ahead and do a quick introduction of myself. My name is Chip Lang, and I'm an emergency medicine PA. I practice primarily in rural Missouri, and I have the Total EM podcast. And this podcast is meant to, for those who are working in emergency medicine. Now, we have lots of people who are listening who are urgent care, primary care, all those different types of specialties that you may run across, because we focus on kind of some broad strokes for all levels. We have medical students, PAs, NPs, physicians, paramedics, nurses, the whole broad spectrum of healthcare providers listening to this as well. And we do have a bit of a focus on rural and remote emergency medicine because of my background and what I enjoy, but there's nothing that says you can't listen to this if you work in an urban or busy department. So what we are talking about today is something that this is the first time we're doing this with EB Medicine, where I look at one of their issues and I read through it, decide some key points or things I want to talk about, and go from there. This one worked out perfectly for me because I love ultrasound. Most of you guys already know that. Point of care ultrasound or POCUS is my thing. And with the ultrasound education company, Practical POCUS, we love to go around the country and starting to get into the world talking about this. But before we dive into all that stuff, the reason why I mention this is because they have a brand new issue that just came out called Pediatric Trauma Extra. And more specifically, what they are focusing in on is the use of ultrasound in pediatric trauma. And we're going to talk about some of the highlights from this because the whole document's 50 pages long. It's full of great pearls and talks about some of the pitfalls that we're going to talk about and stuff like that. So definitely check it out. If you go to the website, go to the show notes, you will be able to access this for free. Now, you won't be able to take the CME with it, but you will be able to access and actually read through the materials that we're going to talk about, which I highly encourage because this will give you a chance to give it a feel of what kind of issues and what kind of evidence and information that EB Medicine provides. So let's start talking about what you can do when we're talking about the use of ultrasound in pediatric patients. Now, it gets kind of tricky, and we need to talk about this first, that with ultrasound literature, it's primarily derived from adults, especially when we're talking about trauma. So when we are talking about studies, for example, the FAST exam, which is like bread and butter emergency medicine, it's being used all the time, that is primarily studied in adults. Now, it is becoming one of the ones that's probably more widely used in pediatrics, but that evidence is still pretty limited. So we need to keep an eye on that and understand that. However, we do have some areas where maybe the pediatric literature is stronger than adults, and one of those is fractures. So actually, let's go ahead and let's dive into the fracture component with this, because I think this is a really neat one to use. I've been using it more and more. I believe that there is definitely a role for this. So let's start off with skull fractures. Now, skull fractures, we worry about this in trauma. Some of it, if you go off certain algorithms like the PCORN algorithm or other clinical criteria and rules, they'll talk about using palpable skull fractures, which can be really hard. I have a hard time palpating skull fractures unless they're significantly displaced or they're very mobile. And especially in pediatric patients, I mean, do you really want to squish around on that head too much? So some people will default to do x-rays, but skull x-rays are not that good. One paper from the BMJ showed that there was only a 38%, so roughly a third, are sensitive. So this is a low sensitivity study. Now, given when you see fractures on a skull x-ray, that's 95% specific. So 38% sensitivity, not that great. What can we do instead? Well, there have been multiple studies. Rabiner et al. Had a pooled data that they used and found sensitivity of 94% and specificity of 96%, much better than the BMJ paper about skull x-rays. So that's a huge benefit to us. But it gets even better. In this Pari et al. Paper from 2013, they had 100% sensitivity and a 95% specificity. And the reason for that lower specificity was because of one false positive patient. I'd rather have a false positive any day than a false negative, and there are ways that you can help derive between the two. But why this is important and why we should bother with doing ultrasound for skulls and looking for fractures that way is, A, the radiation and the benefit with skull x-rays, I mean, it's not that great. Like, if you have a concern, go ahead and go with CT route. But if you're kind of on the fence, and like I said, some of these rules are based on the use of actually being able to see a skull fracture or palpate or stuff like that. Maybe the ultrasound could play a little bit more of a role there. And so I admit I'm probably not using skull fracture ultrasound as much. And part of that is just because of my environment and what we have and what we see. But would I use it with this evidence to support me? Absolutely. I feel comfortable with this, especially since I've already been using ultrasound for MSK type of exams, including fractures for other parts of the body, one of which is now the next point that we're going to talk about, and that's forearm fractures. So I use this primarily for the distal radius, and really most of the evidence is related to distal radius fractures. They call it forearm fractures in general, which is not necessarily incorrect, but most of the evidence comes from the distal radius. And you can use ultrasound not only to identify the actual fracture, but also to look for any reduction attempts and seeing how successful they are. I use this throughout the body, not just for forearms, but for forearms, it's great because it's quick, it's fairly reliable, and it has a sensitivity and specificity, at least based on different studies like this meta-analysis from Chartier et al., where it's 93% for both. And there was this paper that I found with Gordian et al. In 2017, and they compared different types of skeletal injuries versus quote-unquote standard imaging, which is basically X-ray, CT, MRI. And they found ultrasound to be comparable, which I think is important because we want to know, okay, yeah, ultrasound can pick up quite a few of these cases. You know, they may miss 5 to 7%. How does that benefit versus other imaging? Well, x-rays aren't always going to catch fractures. I mean, I just had the other day a patient with a hip fracture. The x-ray missed it, but the CT caught it. Now, how clinically relevant these are can be somewhat tricky. But if I have a pediatric patient where I can see that subtle fracture that you can't really see on the forearm films or the dedicated wrist x-rays or whatever, maybe this will work out better, especially when you have kids who are fighting it or they don't get perfect views. That ultrasound, especially that cold gel, I've noticed has been really beneficial because having that cold gel, they usually like it, and you're putting very little pressure over the actual soft tissue. So overall, I find this a very beneficial type of exam. Additionally, I use the ultrasound for helping me in my reductions because who really wants to be that person who attempts a reduction and they're not successful, but they don't really know it until they go over to x-ray. You find out it's not good. So they come back and you play this game of back and forth and tag where you're taking this patient to and from x-ray multiple times, or you have them standing in the room because maybe you planned ahead and you think you may need to have them in the room ready. Well, great. But now you have to keep ordering those x-rays, and you're exposing that patient to more and more radiation, and it just delays everything else in the department, or at least for radiology, it's delaying them. So instead, I use ultrasound, and what I'll do is I'll take a look ahead of time, see what that fracture fragment looks like, or if it's a simple dislocation of a joint, I'll look and see what it looks like on there. Usually with joints, it's a little bit easier, but sometimes you may run into the more difficult or challenging ones, and so I may use ultrasound for that role. But you use the ultrasound, place it over it. You see what that looks like ahead of time. You obviously know what normal bone looks like, especially if you do this enough times, which is pretty quick and easy to figure out. And as you reduce it, you can then use the ultrasound, place it back over, and see how those fractures line up. And you can actually see the fracture fragments get into better and better position. And in some ways, I'm using this kind of like the way our orthopods will use the C-arm to be able to see their progression and their improvement on their reduction attempts. So this is just another way to do it. Is it necessarily right or wrong? Well, it's kind of hard to say, but what I can tell you is there's at least evidence that ultrasound can help successfully reduce these fractures in up to 94% of cases. So with that being said, I mean, that's not bad. I'd rather be able to use the ultrasound quickly like I do currently to say, yep, this looks good, send them over the x-ray, and then maybe there's that chance, maybe that roughly 1 in 20 chance where I'm going to have to go ahead and maybe attempt a reduction again. But in most cases, you'll get at least decent enough alignment on your ultrasound that these people can then be referred to orthopedic surgery. Now, I make sure to keep my orthopods in the mix, and I would encourage you to do the same, but ultrasound can still play a role for this, and that's my key point that I want to drive home on this, is ultrasound can play a role for not only the identification of fractures, but also to help us with the reductions. If you want to see some images of the fractures in GIF form, I do have a couple on the website attached to the POCUS Atlas. That's in addition to, again, the resources that you will find on the EB Medicine article covering all of this. Let's go ahead and dive in on some of the pitfalls to consider when we're POCUSing children. And I want to hit the one that we were basically just covering, and that's with fractures. Forearm fractures in particular can have some issues with it, but really any fracture in any area of the body, we can run into these issues, especially in younger children. So when we're looking for a fracture, what we're looking for is a disruption of the cortex. It should look jagged. However, what commonly occurs is that you identify a fracture incorrectly, and what it was either a joint or a growth plate. And the key difference is that those joints or growth plates, they should be smooth and have curved ends. They should look clean. They should look pristine versus those fracture fragments, which are, again, sharp and jagged in nature. And they should be right in the middle of the cortex somewhere versus near the edge of it. So that can happen. You can obviously have fracture fragments that go through the articular surface. Those are going to be much more challenging. And usually those are the ones that you're going to go ahead and x-ray in some form or fashion. And right now, it's kind of the standard practice, just like anyone who's new using ultrasound in any particular role, like probably the person who's listening right now, when you think about fractures and you're trying to use POCUS and incorporating it into your practice, make sure you have some sort of confirmatory test. So at the beginning, that's going to be your x-ray. And then over time, as you feel more comfortable with this and competency builds up, you may decide to like to forgo imaging in certain cases, or you may use your imaging like I sometimes do, where if I have a negative x-ray, but clinically I really suspect this being a fracture, I'll grab the ultrasound and then look at it that way. And I might be able to see that slight disruption in cortex that just the x-ray couldn't pick up for whatever reason. When in doubt, though, make sure to compare it to the contralateral side. So if I ever have any question about a fracture, what I'll do is I'll look at the other side and I'll see what it looks like. And comparing the two sides can really help out in identifying whether or not it's a true fracture versus one of those joints or growth plates that we run into. Now, I'm barely going to touch this, but in the EB Medicine issue, they did talk about assessing the IVC, and they did bring up that it is very limited in this role. For those who are maybe not using POCUS yet for fluid status and hydration and stuff like that, essentially the literature is pretty limited and there's a lot of debate. It goes back and forth about how effective it is, which ones are good, which exams are not, and there's even less information on pediatric IVC evaluation. So the reason why I mentioned this is because you will see this in the article. They briefly discuss it there too. But just keep in mind that you really need to be cautious about using the IVC to evaluate for hydration status in children, especially by itself, because there's really not that great of evidence in the first place. And then to try and use it as your sole decision point is not really a good idea. I will sometimes look at the IVC in children. I'll compare over time and trend and see how that works. But realistically, when it comes to our pediatric patients, I realize that that's a huge gap. And I even realize in our adults that I have to be careful with how I do this. So I use hydration status and stuff like that slightly different. And I look at this as a whole picture, not just the IVC. So I look at heart and lungs as well, usually. Okay, so the last pitfall I really want to talk about is the classic one, the FAST exam. And I really quit using it as the FAST exam, and I do the EFAST exam, which is the extended focus assessment with sonography and trauma. You may ask yourself if you're a little new to the concept of the FAST and EFAST and ultrasound in general, especially in trauma, why that matters. And the extended exam includes the lungs. So traditionally, when it was first taught, it was pretty much looking for free fluid in the abdomen and looking for a pericardial effusion, which is not bad. But since the extended focus assessment with sonography and trauma, the EFAS exam, it now includes the lungs, which I really like because I can help pick up pneumothorax and hemothorax. And I've always learned it this way. I think it's pretty easy to do. It's very quick, really doesn't add any real time. And it gives you just that much more data to work off of. Because realistically, in a lot of patients that I'm seeing at least, the pericardial effusion is rare, to say the least, like really rare. But I do see a fair number of pneumothorax. I see some hemothorax. And yeah, I'll see some blood in the abdomen as well. I'll see that free fluid that's there. The reason why I bring this up is because with the pediatric patient population, this has been fairly well studied. Now, there are some advances that are being made, such as using contrast and seeing if that helps at all with identification of certain types of injuries. But right now, with what we currently have, what we can say is that this is a much better rule-in versus rule-out tool, both in adults and pediatrics. But in pediatric patients, what I get really worried about is this study that came out in 2013 that found that a third of the patients had a false negative exam on POCUS. And so, I mean, that's a lot of kids, especially ones that may end up requiring surgery. And so we really don't want to miss this patient population. Now, this, again, doesn't mean to ditch the ultrasound and that it's useless. It's that we need to consider the rule-in side. And something else to at least consider, and it's harder to find evidence with this, but I've seen it before and it gets talked about. You know, obviously we talk about women, they may have a small amount of physiologic free fluid. Well, keep in mind, kids can to a certain degree have a small amount of physiologic free fluid as well. So if you see a lot of free fluid, be concerned. If you see no free fluid, that's not a rule out. But a little bit of free fluid there, I think it's something that's at least worth that further evaluation. However you want to do that is kind of based on your system and your previous experience and what you feel comfortable with. But just know that the EFAS exam is not great at rule outs. It's much better at the rule in side of things. And I believe it still has a role, especially for me in a rule setting. When I have a patient with a positive EFAS exam, I know we're not keeping that locally and I get them out of there. I don't wait for CT. I don't wait for other imaging. We move that patient out as quickly as possible so they can go to the place they need to be managed, the trauma center. All right. Did you enjoy this content? I hope you do as much as I did. And I'm excited to announce that with working with EB Medicine and getting this all out here, that if you are new to this, if you are someone who doesn't already have a subscription with EB Medicine, go ahead, go over to the show notes, click on the link that's going to be at there at the, towards the bottom of the page, because you can get a special $50 off of your subscription with EB Medicine, which is huge savings, whether you're a PA, an NP, or physician, it doesn't matter. Look this up and go to our website, click on that link, and that way you can get the discount there. For those of you who may have found this by other means, that website is totalem.org, and you'll go under the emergency professionals section. That's where the whole blog and podcast side is, and that's where you'll find it all right there for you. And it's podcast number 156. Also, if you are wanting to learn more about how to perform ultrasound, check out Practical POCUS at practicalpocus.com. That's practical as in the word P-R-A-C-T-I-C-A-L, POCUS, P-O-C-U-S, that stands for point of care ultrasound. So go to practicalpocus.com and there you'll be able to see some of our upcoming courses, which you can go to. We do them as part of other conferences. We also have standalone events such as Critical Access 2019, which is just around the corner. And then we also have other resources, including we're going to start doing some online courses because we understand that not everyone can come in person to a course. You may be somewhere really rural and remote, or you may just have a schedule that doesn't really permit you to run away to a course somewhere else. We want to help you out. So we have set it up where you can learn ultrasound at a distance. And if you want to be able to get an ultrasound machine at the same time, which more of those details will come, just check out practicalpocus.com on that side of things to learn more on it. So finally, if you like this, let us know. We are so happy to be working with EB Medicine and Practical Pocus to provide such great information as this. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.